Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the December 6, 2020 session, focusing on 2 Peter 3, verses 8 through 15. While you wait, I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Well, usually I have a very insightful question to ask the group to help us get started with our conversation and warm us up, but in conversation before we started the podcast recording, discovered that Daniel has an interesting question for us. So I'm going to let Daniel lead us in that and then segue right into his intro. So Daniel, what have you got for us?
So I've got a question that I'm dying to know the answer to. So don't y'all mute your microphones yet. I want to ask you, have y'all ever heard about the life clock? The life clock was invented by two men from Chicago, and I don't know if you can still buy it, but it at that time it sold for around $100. And the idea was you program into this clock your age and gender, and then based upon your lifestyle, average lifespans, it would count down the hours, minutes, and seconds that you have left in your life. So my question is,
wow.
Would you like me to get you one for Christmas? No, would you be interested in one of these clocks? If so, I mean, if not, I sort of understand. But if so, I'm really curious, why or why not?
Wow.
It's an intriguing thought.
You know, I remember reading somewhere that in some cultures, in modern medicine, in some cultures, you know, just me off the top of my head from graduate school 30 years ago, but if they find a terminal illness in someone, they don't necessarily tell the person that they have a terminal illness because they'd be afraid the person would just surrender and, you know, oh, well, I'm going to die. But let them go and enjoy life until they die, you know? And our thing is we tell you, and then, you know, there's all this angst and all that stuff. I don't know. You know, it's kind of, now I'm singing that Tim McGraw song, Live Like You're Dying. But, right? I don't know. My question is, has anybody given Keith Richards one yet? And has he broken it so far? I mean, because his time ran out, you know, 50 years ago.
At least.
Yeah.
At least. I feel like I would be unable to resist finding out what it told me.
Yes.
Just because I if it were right there, because seriously, like, I'm going to go look this up and I'm sure I'll find something on the internet that will let me figure this out. and then I'm going to do this. So, but I'm not sure that it would be, it's a good choice to do that because I feel like it creates, I don't know. I think it could go either way.
Yeah.
Like it could be helpful. It could cause someone, if you know, okay, I have so many years left to live, it could cause you to live a more full life. You could try to, you know, you've got this much time left. And so you try to get everything in. But I also think it could be very anxiety producing. I've only got this much time left.
For
how
sure.
am I going to do everything I want to do? Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as the oldest person on this podcast, I would definitely not be interested in knowing how little time I have left. Now, it's for the same reason that I've never been interested in those, what is it, like a genetic test that you can take?
Yeah.
It tells you your likelihood or if you've got a genetic tendency towards certain illnesses or something latent that could wake up. I just don't want to know. Which is odd, right? Because my philosophical background includes existentialism, in which, just as Nikki has described, knowing that we are mortal and that there is an end can motivate us to take advantage of and live more fully the time we do have. I'm just not sure that would work for me. I think I would just be a ball of worry.
Well, like, you know, the existentialists all say, we're all dying.
Well, we are. We all
and
have
the moment you're
condition.
Born, you're dying.
I mean, yeah, it's the only thing any of us are guaranteed.
I'm a day closer today than I was yesterday.
Yes, yeah. But Daniel, I think this is not a Christmas gift. I think this is an Ash Wednesday gift.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
I still don't want it, but yeah.
Because isn't that why what we do on Ash Wednesday is we remind ourselves that we are all going to die and that we do not have long on this earth and we're going to turn to dust again.
Yeah. That's interesting that this doesn't have anything to do with anything, but one of the hardest days of my pastoral ministry is every year when I put ashes upon the forehead of my children.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I remind them that they are dust. Yeah. So back to this.
Okay.
I'm just too curious of a person. If this technology existed and it could be trusted, that's a big if.
Right.
I think I'd want to know. I guess I'm part of that knowledge is power kind of things. But it is morbid. And I guarantee. I haven't asked her, but I guarantee my wife would not want it. She would throw it right out the window. So I don't know if you can still get it, but if you are so inclined, there is an Apple Watch app apparently. But so I think I'm on the fence about this, but I resonate with the reason that it was built, which we've hinted at here. And one of the inventors said this, quote, "When you see that your time is quantified, the quality of your life will increase." I'm not entirely sure that's accurate, but I think there's something to it. Because as we've also mentioned now, time is passing. Whether we want to admit it or not, time is passing for us. How shall we use our time? In the language of Advent, how shall we wait? Thanksgiving will not be what we want it to be this year. In my house, it'll just be my wife and daughters at our table. And I know we should be thankful for that. I know we should be thankful for the family that I have, but there are many more spots around the table that will be empty. You know, with COVID-19 continuing to wreak havoc upon our communities and our world, we just can't take the risk. What's more, I will be leading 3 funeral services next week, Thanksgiving week. 3 beloved church members. So forgive me, but I'm not feeling very thankful. Indeed, I find myself more often driving by Home Depot just to make sure they're still hiring. And I'm not even going to get into what's taking place in Washington, D.C., after what has been described as our safest and most secure election ever. Because, well, you know. Yes, this year is a wilderness for many of us. How shall we wait? What should we do this Advent, Advent 2020, in a year that has been so 2020, to use that language? What should we do this Advent, a season of watching and waiting? I love how Frederick Buechner puts it. The house lights go off, the footlights come on. Even the chattiest stop their chattering as they wait in darkness for the curtain to rise. In the orchestra pit, the violin bows are poised. The conductor has raised his baton. You can feel your heart beat. The extraordinary thing that is about to happen is matched only by the extraordinary moment just before it happens. Advent is the name of that moment. Frederick Buechner has a way with words, and I admit I love that. But this year, I'm not feeling it. If you feel like me, how shall we wait this Advent? As much as I don't desire to subject anyone to any more 2020, here's what I believe. I think we wait by doing exactly what we're already doing. 2 Peter tells us that God's promises can be trusted. And in accordance with those promises, quote, "We wait for new heavens and a new earth where righteousness is at home." So yes, we participate in Advent waiting by continuing the work we know how to do. We care for the sick. We stand with the lonely. We advocate for those without a voice. We comfort those in despair. We rejoice with those who rejoice, and we weep with those who weep. We testify to the creative goodness of God. For if Christ can defeat death itself, what might he do with you and me? All this means that we live as a people of hope. Even when all evidence points us to a contrary conclusion, we live as a people of hope. Lawyer and anti-death penalty advocate Brian Stevenson says, "Hope is a willingness to position oneself in a hopeless place and be a witness. That allows one to believe in a better future, even in the face of abusive power," he says. "That kind of hope makes you strong." So the hope God gives us is that we are never truly alone in this world, and that where we are now is not where we have to be. So even now in 2020, I am waiting, believing that God is still working, even now, to bring in a hopeful and a beautiful future, even if I can't yet see it. Advent waiting is not about sitting on our hands or twiddling our thumbs. Now more than ever, we must believe that we are not helpless and we are not hopeless. We wait in Advent by continuing the good work God has called us to do. That's a little background on our text for today.
Daniel, I gotta admit, I wasn't real sure how we were going to turn 2 Peter into an Advent text, but you did a mighty fine job.
Well, thank you.
You did. And you caused me to have all the feels, as people say. Can you say the quote again about hope and standing is a choice to stand in hopelessness, or...
Hope is a willingness to position oneself in a hopeless place and be a witness.
That is powerful. Is there a name that goes with that quote?
That's Brian Stevenson, okay, who wrote Just Mercy. You know, that became a big movie and such. Excellent book
I think it really fits this text, because I mean, you know, the writer of this letter is writing to a church that is, gosh, some 60 years at least after Christ has risen from the dead, right? Or after Christ has returned. I think it was written probably in 90 CE. And so they have been waiting for a very, very long time. And I think had gotten to this place of feeling like there was no more hope in waiting, like there was no more reason to wait. But the other thing that I thought about immediately when you said that quote was the story of Jeremiah, when Jeremiah buys the land as the Israelites are being taken into Babylon. And he this land is worth nothing, and they are all being stripped from it. And it is in the middle of that. You could say that there was a true market crash happening. But in the middle of that, he chose to buy the land and say, it is worth buying this land. We will be back here one day. And it was, and by all measures, they weren't coming back. But he chose to buy the land with the promise that he would return. That's what came to mind as you were talking. It's a great background. Thank you.
I guess for me, part of the difficulty in getting into this passage, and frankly, this idea of Advent waiting, may just be a problem of language. And I didn't do word studies or anything, you know, looking at the Greek on this, but at least in English, we have this this notion of your waiting stops when you do something. You know, this almost like waiting is idleness. This is this idle time, and then you stop waiting and you do something. Whereas the biblical idea, I think, of waiting means, or while that goal or whatever it is that you're waiting upon is realized, or until it's realized, there are things you do. And I guess just admitting that was part of the first mental block I had to get beyond, that or doing something while waiting is not a contradiction in terms. Does that make sense? What I'm getting at there, I first had to get beyond that.
No, that makes sense. And I think you're not talking about like scrolling on your phone while you're waiting in line.
Right.
Because right. That essentially is doing nothing. Yeah. At least for me. How does it shift things or change things or help you to have that shift in language?
And I don't want to draw this false dichotomy between like just being busy, like that's actually doing something, but when we are waiting upon something, I think for me at least, having something to do realizes that it's not, as I say, it's not helpless, it's not hopeless. Mm. That there are still things I can do. There are still contributions I can make, which may not change what it is I'm waiting upon, but will change me while I'm waiting.
Mm.
Maybe that's the distinction I see.
I'm really enjoying this conversation. It's very helpful. And Daniel, I really, your introduction really spoke to me, and that quote. Very powerful, but I have to confess, now I bring in, and I think some of our listeners do too, our baggage, our background, some of us with more conservative Baptist and more conservative or evangelical takes on things. And so Advent is still in my time frame, still a relatively new thing for me, though I've been dealing with Advent for 10 or 15 years or so, but still relatively new. But this text from 2 Peter, I want to share a specific memory from youth group days. When is Jesus coming again? And, you know, this is before the Left Behind series, but we had that kind of mindset that this world's just going to evaporate. We're here and we're waiting for Jesus to help us escape from this world. Right? And so when is Jesus coming again to take us away from all this? And when we would hear evangelists at youth rallies preach, they would never preach from this text, but nobody ever preached from 2 Peter, no offense. But, right? But they would always ask this question. And this is what the question, the first thing that came to my mind when you asked us, Daniel, about the life clock. You know, what if you knew if your world was going to end? The very first thing I came up with was the hearing evangelist after evangelist after evangelist at youth rally after youth rally after youth rally throughout my life say, you could walk out of here tonight and get hit by a bus and your life is over.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, but the goal of that is to manipulate you to think of an afterlife. And not to say that, and I'm not dismissing an afterlife, but all that matters is there afterwards when we get out of this world. And I remember people talking about Jesus is coming again, we're going to be left behind, or they're going to be left behind, we're the ones that are going to be taken, we're the chosen ones, you know, all that kind of rapture theology stuff. And I remember pointing to this text and quoting from 2 Peter, you know, that all this talk about with the Lord is one day is 1,000 years, 1,000 years are like today, and the Lord is not slow, but patient, because God doesn't want anyone to perish. And that kind of blew the whole thing, you know, and people either got mad and walked away or like, wow, maybe we shouldn't be all hung up on escaping, because there's things to do here. And what we're doing is flipping the script, because we're, instead of thinking about an escape, but now we're thinking about remaining here. And even while we're waiting, what is coming? We're waiting on something to come, not to make to take us away, but to rebuild here a new heaven and a new earth. And it just kind of flips the whole theology that many of us have had flipped over the last few generations, over the last few decades of our lives processing all this. But I love this idea of hoping here, where there is no hope, standing there and declaring hope. standing there with the people who are supposedly, quote, going to be left behind, and standing with them so that they're not left behind. Because Jesus is coming to be with them, the new heaven and the new earth. To me, that's just kind of how my brain works and bringing in my Baptist borderline fundamentalist background in it with it.
And Bert, I appreciate you bringing that up, because if you're quoting, well, multiple parts of this passage, but in particular, verse 13, where it says, we wait for new heavens and a new earth.
Yeah.
But it ends with, where righteousness is at home.
Mm.
And I think remembering that this is not, we so often read these texts as individuals, right? You know, hope, waiting. It's about me hoping, me waiting, how I wait. Mm-hmm. But really, this was a community of faith mm-hmm. in this posture, right? And this call for, as it says in verse 13, where righteousness is at home in this new heaven and this new earth that we so yearn to have. I mean, I get that, honestly, in 2020 more than I ever have before.
Right.
That, you know, that we are all so connected to one another. That this is a community thing. And as you were talking, Bert, I mean, there are whole communities of people for whom the hope of God's coming and bringing righteousness finally is an incredible hope that they have been waiting for a long time. But I think maybe, certainly for me, having lived a wonderfully comfortable life, this year has made me realize that what happens to somebody else matters to me. And how our community decides to be built and shaped, what our community decides to value in terms of human life and how we show that, how we treat truth, I mean, good grief, that matters. It's not just about me. So I'm going to say like you, but you can cut all this, but that's what your comments led me to think about, is that I'm reading this from a we standpoint as much as an I standpoint.
And we have said this numerous times over the last few years on this podcast, but you know, our white Protestant theology has been so individualistic.
Yes.
Our white Protestant European theology has been so individualistic. And then when we dare dip our toes into the cultures and the theology of our Hispanic neighbors, or African American specifically.
Yes.
It's or Native very American. Communal. Mm-hmm. Very communal. And you know, this is generation after generation. And some of us won't get there, but we as a people will get there.
Yes.
You know, Martin Luther King saying, I may not get there with you. I've seen the promised land. I've seen over the mountaintop, and I may not get there with you. But we, you know, it's that communal. And certainly in the time of the Israelite people in the prophet's time and in Jesus' time and this time, you know, 60 years or so after Jesus, it's a communal approach. And yeah, for me, I might get there, I might not. But I'm a part of this together with all of us,
mm-hmm.
waiting and doing for this new world to come, for the new world to come.
Yes.
I like the layer of adding that community element to this conversation, because I think that waiting with community is often easier to do than waiting by yourself.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? That mm-hmm. Because sometimes I'm sick and tired of waiting, and I need somebody to encourage me, to help me, to remind me why we wait. It's an easier lift when we do it with one another than when we do it alone.
That is so good, Nikki. Yes, and I just, if any River Road church members are listening to this, that's the way I'm going to preach this text coming up. Because, I mean,
But they're not excused from skipping church that Sunday.
That's right. Yeah. You still got, because who knows what will happen.
Right.
But are there more comforting words than to hear someone say, I'll wait with you?
Mm.
Oh, man.
No, there's not.
I mean, it doesn't, again, I don't, it doesn't It may not hasten what you're waiting for or change that, but it changes you mm-hmm. in the midst of it, so that you say, you know what? We can do this. We can get through this because we're not alone in this world. Mm.
Well, these days have made me think about things I've never thought about before in ways I haven't. And I find myself revisiting things that I thought I understood or maybe understood. I came across a quote by Anne Frank. And now, I would never profess to understand what she went through, but I understand a little bit better in this time in history right now and what we're going through than I did before. And this sense of this teenage girl who lived most of her life, you know, in the Netherlands, and found herself in hiding from the Gestapo. And the good graces of a family who waited with them and gave them hope. And wisdom beyond her years. She says, "I simply can't build my hopes on a foundation of confusion, misery, and death. I think peace and tranquility will return again." And of course it did. But not for her. And that is the hard part of this life we live, right? Sometimes our hopes and our work, they're not things that we see the fruits of. But we can see that it matters to others, to those who come behind us, for those we wait with. And I have to think that it is part of our faith's calling, part of what we are hearing in this text, that perhaps is that Advent portion we keep seeking. That in fact, we are waiting together for this new heaven and new earth where righteousness is at home. May it be so, and may it come soon.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.